Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, January 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Let's see. The snow's flying. The ice and 16 feet of snow in places. And by the end of the week, parts of the Northeast will be colder than the planet Mars. So what do we do? Yeah, let's have a gardening show today. What a great idea. So we'll warm up the studio with thoughts of spring. And joining us today, we have horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. Not a bad idea. We do our winter gardening show usually in February, I think. We thought, well, we'd do it early January. And lo and behold, here comes a blizzard. Good time to call is right now, 800-348-2551, the number. 800-348-2551. It's a winter gardening show coming up. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the fourth day of 2018. A huge snowstorm is blanketing the Northeast, and today we'll talk gardening. Joining us today to answer your questions about gardening, Bob Graves, a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Also, Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. I can't say enough about these two guys. They made it in. The driving not good. Bob and Fred, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Happy New Year. We really felt for Ray here. I wasn't sure what he was going to do if we didn't show up.
We've had those situations. You just start talking, and soon enough, the show's over. Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you want to think spring, 800-348-2551. Or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. And I made a crack about being colder than Mars at the beginning of the show. Saw a thing on CNN that later in the week, I think a part of New Hampshire is predicted to be so many degrees below zero and much colder than the high temperature on Mars.
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah, not joking.
So you weren't kidding.
No, I've had about enough of the winter. I don't know about you. I'm ready for some gardening.
Well, I am glad as a horticulturalist that when we get this kind of cold, we have some snow on the ground.
Yep, I was thinking the same thing.
I know a lot of people don't like that, but boy, it helps the survival rate of plants tremendously if there's some snow to provide some insulation. So, number one, the ground doesn't freeze and thaw, because next week it's going to go up in the 30s.
Yep.
I heard that, yeah.
And the other thing is the cold doesn't go as deep if you've got some snow.
Oh, you make a point, yeah.
That's right, yep. So it does insulate against those really cold temperatures, and fluctuations are bad. That's one of the worst things that get us. It's often not the cold temperature that people, I mean, if you have a plant that's in a that's sort of marginal in our zone, then, yes, cold could take it. But normal plants, it's that fluctuation that really gets them, and snow does help to regulate that.
It's going to be very cold tomorrow and extremely cold on Saturday. I think the high temperature here in Albany is predicted to be one degree above.
Yes. Yeah, I think -4 by us, I heard. Yeah.
That's
for a high.
That can't be easy on our plant friends.
No, anything that's marginal, that's when you start to really, you know, test those marginal plants.
You know, this is strange to say this, but fortunately next week it's only supposed to go into the 30s.
Right.
You know, if it was going to go, and it could go up in the 40s or 50s after that kind of cold, that would be a really bad thing.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And it sounds like it's going to continue to stay cold in the evening during those 30 degree days.
It's not going to be a great fluctuation.
No. So in terms of plants, overall, I think so far so good.
So far.
Although by the 30s next week?
Yeah.
We'll be out in our swimsuits.
This is definitely hardening us off.
Yep. Yesterday, even 20 degrees felt balmy.
It sure did.
It did. And when we hit 30, T-shirts are coming on.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming today. I know the roads are really, really terrible. And if you are listening in a vehicle, you already know the roads are terrible. Take it slowly today. And try to get there in one piece. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Before we get to the phones, Fred, you had the big search for the most gigantic oak in all the land, and I think that finished up finally.
Yeah, we wrapped our year up measuring trees, and we sort of thought that over at the Landis Arboretum, we thought, you know, how much work could this really be to go out and measure all these oak trees? How many people are really going to submit it? Well, we got some great publicity on sort of the oak tree hunt this year, and thanks to everyone that gave us publicity. And because of that, though, we generated an incredible amount of nominations. It was over 100 nominations that came in for red and white oak trees.
Yeah.
We confirmed the top was about 30. It was over 30, 35 oaks that we had to sort of narrow down. Are these going to be the biggest ones? And we literally went all over the state, especially.
How old do you think the biggest one was that you found?
Well, you know, big trees and old age don't always go hand in hand. Sometimes the smaller trees are often the older trees, which is the way it works.
Okay.
We're talking 300-year-old oak tree for the winter. You know, conservatively estimated 275, but it's probably into 300. Year
That's
range
amazing.
Pretty easily. We found a few
found a lot of them that old.
We did. We had over 30 that we had to confirm measurements for because they were close enough that said, we got to get out there and see them.
Wow.
And of those, the top, we gave awards, including cash prizes, for the top three white oaks and the top three red oaks. And the top three white oaks and two of the top three red oaks, all out of Schoharie County. And the town of Blenheim really packs in some big ones. And now people said, is there any reason for that? Yeah. And, you know, part of that is, yes, the soils of the Schoharie County have been known
as very rich, fertile soils.
Mm. And you put that same tree that we found down in the Schoharie Valley and you put that on top of a mountain. In fact, you've even put that at Landis Arboretum. That tree is not going to be as big in 250, 300 years, but you give it that really rich valley soil and it can produce some really large trees. And the top three white oaks were all Schoharie County, like I said, alone. Two of the winners, the overall winning white oak and the overall winning red oak, both out of the town of Blenheim, and both about 5 miles apart.
Wow, we'll be darned.
But it's caused more work now, Ray.
Well, and do you have to do it next year as well?
Well, you know, we are going to do it again. Yes.
Really?
Yeah. In addition to the big oaks, they were always trying to look for a bigger one. A lot of people asked us during this tree hunt, hey, well, you know, we know where a lot of the big oaks are, but where's the overall biggest tree in the entire region? And, we don't have an answer for that. But, Ray, we're going to set out forth this year, and the competition is officially kicking off in 2018. The details will be on our website, landisarboretum.org.
Well, that's pretty exciting.
And we are going to give cash prizes for the top three overall biggest trees. Doesn't matter what species they are. Biggest tree by point total.
And then in 2020, you can do the biggest Japanese knotweed competition.
We might hold off on it.
No.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551, the number. Kerry in Plainfield. Kerry, I hope you're bundled up.
Oh, I am, Ray. Hey, I'd rather be talking about gardening than snow blowing any day.
Right you are.
I have a challenging thing for me is my window flower boxes. I grow these cascading plants, or I try to grow them, with a mixture of other flowers. And for some reason, you know, over the last couple of years, it's ivy, vinca. I put various potato plants in once in a while. They just don't get full and cascade like I think they should. And I was wondering if your guests have any suggestion. I was thinking actually of a flowering cascading plant this year. If there's any suggestions which I might have a little more success with.
How much sun do these window boxes get?
They get quite a bit of sun. They really do.
And do you change your soil every year, put fresh potting soil in?
Yes, I do. And everything else seems to be growing good except those that cascade.
And the containers have holes in them, so they drain.
Yep, they're very large containers. It's not the plastic.
Yeah, okay.
Do you ever fertilize them? I assume yes.
No, not really. No, I put the Miracle-Gro in and mix it in with the soil.
Yeah. Well, if one of the cascading things that you're growing in sun, you know, one of the things I'd recommend would be petunias. But, you know, if you're doing petunias and having trouble, there's a couple things. Number one, if they're grown in the same place year after year, you can start to get some fungal diseases that will hurt them. So you may want to sterilize those boxes with some Clorox and water to try to clean them up. And the other thing is, if they are petunias, which would be a good one in the sun cascading, they need to be fed a lot. And they need a lower pH.
Okay.
So you may want to be checking the pH, and I would be feeding them at least weekly if that's the case.
Yep. And when he says lower pH, we're talking about introducing some something that's going to sort of acidify that soil. And a good one, you know, is just any kind of soluble. A lot of times don't like soluble products, especially for outdoor plants like trees and shrubs that are grown in soil, because very, very little action in terms of that soluble fertilizer. It doesn't do a lot once you hit soil, but they're really potent in flower boxes and containers. Solubles definitely are the way to go. And, you know, looking to check that pH is going to certainly help. Water, too. Just continuously don't let them dry out. It's hard to overwater, I think.
Depending upon
the sun.
What it is.
Yeah.
If it's in the sun, it probably dries out.
Yeah. But overwatering is a problem. But at least, you know, thorough saturations every single time. You should have no problem with those cascading plants. And wave petunias were the ones I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
They clean themselves out.
They do like to be fed, and they do need a lower pH.
Yep. Kerry, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Sharon in Valencia. Sharon, you're on.
Hey, my question is, I have a dwarf maple, an Acer palmieri, but the red one.
Yep.
And I've had it 2 years. And it's beautiful, but the leaves haven't dropped on it. They're all brown and crinkled, but none of them have dropped. Is that a concern?
Is that
And the wind is blowing and the snow is here, but the leaves are still sticking on it.
Is that something that you saw this year as opposed to other years?
Yeah.
This year there was an odd sort of phenomenon that kind of happened. It sort of, without getting into a really lengthy conversation on this, the really fast story is basically in the spring we had an abundance of moisture, and that sort of set on an onslaught of increased growth for foliage for plants.
Ooh.
So in the beginning things were doing much better, and overall, and according to my wife and me, we raked up way more leaves this year than ever. And that's because, and a lot of people say that, and that's because there was more leaves on those trees. And throughout the year, we had some continued wet weather that introduced some fungal problems. So some trees started to lose leaves prematurely, and that didn't really harm things, but it was part of the sort of natural evolution of this season, the way it sort of unfolded. But the reason why leaves got stuck on is because that increased moisture, it sort of had increased growth, and they weren't shutting down the way they normally do in the fall. We had some relatively good temperatures, and then it got really cold.
Yeah. Yeah, it was warm and then cold, and it was like they got caught with their pants down.
That's a good way to look at it there, right?
And mine looks exactly like that.
And we have some in our yard like that, too.
They'll come off.
Yeah, they will fall off. There's a natural sort of layer of cells that form on a leaf petiole that creates them as a separation layer. It helps them drop.
Yeah.
And this year they actually got frozen on the tree before they ever shut down. That little bundle never separated. So now it's going to take them rotting off.
Another one of those
off.
Things where plants don't like a rapid change in temperature.
Yep. There you go. Sharon, we have to take a break here. This is fun. Fred Breglia is here. Bob Graves is here. And it's a gardening show, by golly. We'll be right back.
Support for Vox Pop on WAMC comes from Waterwheel Village, Galloway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. WaterwheelVillage.com. Colby Attorneys Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, as well as other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY Eyewear, Albany.com. And from Dr. Schnuffy's, providing high-potency vitamin herbal tablets for flu season colds, formulated by a local doctor with natural immune-boosting ingredients. Available at many co-ops from Albany to Boston, GetWellFormulas.com.
Let it snow. It's a Vox Pop. Oh, my gosh, it's snowing out there, right? 2:21, right? On a Thursday, right? So we'll do a gardening show, right? Of course we will. Bob Graves is here from Fadigan's Nursery, and also Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. He of the largest oak in town hunt fame. And this one came in via email from William, who writes, "To the experts." You two.
Let's see. Wait.
He writes, "Our wood stove is cranking, and with it comes a lot of ash. What are the benefits of adding this to compost or garden, and how do I gauge the amount to add so as to avoid a problem?" And that is from William in Selkirk.
That's a hard one because it seems like a wonderful thing, and it is. It's a source of potassium.
It can
potash
be, absolutely.
Is potassium. But, boy, too much of that is way too much of a good thing.
It is. I always say with wood ash that a little bit of wood ash is good. A lot of wood ash is really bad.
Okay, so what does it do when you put way too much in there?
Well, it's a buffer, like sulfur would lower pH. Well, this is an alkalizer. This one actually raises pH. So it
screws
sweeten.
Up your pH.
Yep. Yeah. And a little bit around lilacs, things that like a little bit more alkaline soil will appreciate that. But anytime you start to put a lot of ash, it'd be the same thing.
Basically a dusting, right?
A dusting is what you're looking for.
So if I took my wood ash from my fireplace and put it underneath where all the pine needles drop and make my soil acidic, I could maybe neutralize things?
You would actually start to alkalize that dramatically, but they're adapted to growing in acidic conditions.
Okay.
So you could.
But I like the grass to grow.
You will neutralize things. Or you will eventually probably take the tree out.
That's not why your grass isn't growing.
Long term.
What do you mean that's not why the grass isn't growing? Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, so if you want to store some of that wood ash in a separate spot, like a wood ash pile away from trees that are really going to be damaged, then you could later on take some of that and incorporate some of it. But, you know, when in doubt, check the pH. If your compost is really, really acidic, then adding some of that and adjusting that pH can be a really, really good thing.
All right.
Remember, plants like 6.8 is the perfect spot for most plants, not acidic-loving ones.
This one came in from Wyatt. Hi, is there an indoor plant that's good at filtering the air and not toxic to cats? Thank you and stay warm. And that's from Wyatt.
You know, there's a lot of research been done, and most of it with NASA, but all plants will help clear the air.
Sure.
The important question is, what conditions do you have that support an indoor plant? You know, do you have a lot of light? Do you not have a lot of light? Dracaenas are great for that. They'll tolerate anywhere from moderate to low light.
Jades seem to be pretty tolerant.
Jades, if you have sun, they need some light. Schefflerias are great because they're big. Depends on how much room you have. So the more important question is, plants are good. What kind of conditions do you have?
Okay, and this one is from Ryan in Warwick, and then we'll get back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Ryan writes, I have a very hard time growing vegetables in pots. They get long and leggy and never really produce much fruit. We're growing tomato and green bean. Any suggestions? That's from Ryan in Warwick.
Well, you know, I always go back to that pH. pH will play a large role in terms of what kind of development you're going to get out of the fruit that you're trying to grow.
And if it's stretching, it makes me wonder about the amount of sun.
That's what I'm wondering, too.
If it's not, you know, people say, I got to grow vegetables in part sun. And, you know, it doesn't work very well. No farmer is making a living growing vegetables in the shade. They need a lot of sun. They need good fertility. Particularly with tomatoes and pots, they don't like to dry out.
If you're
inside, though, quartz light, something that has a wide spectrum of light, would do the job, right?
No. It would do something.
If you're going to grow plants inside, you got to kind of have the kind of light they have when they're growing marijuana. I mean, it's got to be.
If you want to have the really.
You got to have metal halide, mercury vapor lights. I mean, it's like being under a street lamp.
Oh. It's a lot more intense light that you need to produce.
Not that I know this from experience.
No, I hope nothing about that. Attorney General Sessions is listening and isn't going to Vatican's. All right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Mitch in Niskayuna. Hello, Mitch. You're on.
Hi, Ray, and hi, guys.
Hello.
I got a big question.
All right.
I've been gardening all my life, and I can't grow garlic. I don't. Any of the other versions, I can do it. I've tried different things, going on YouTube, and I've done pH tests, and I can't grow garlic.
Okay,
what do you think, Fred?
Well, you know, sometimes when I hear people say that kind of thing, and they tend to be green-thumbed folks, so they can grow everything else, it comes down to sometimes the seed source. Are you getting where are you getting the garlic from? From the grocery store? From a reputable organic grower?
No. I got through a reputable seed company. Online.
All right. Well, I only ask you that.
Burpee, whatever.
Ones that I've seen that the garlics that I've seen grow really good, the ones that seem to do the best with the least amount of work, are more locally adapted garlics. So, for example, look for someone that grows them in your area. It doesn't matter that it's an online source. It just matters that is it really adapted for your growing condition. And sometimes some of those online seed sources are they're really good seed, but they're pulling from an area that isn't really your growing condition. So if you could talk to a local Nothing better than talking to the local source. If you can find a local guy that produces good garlic and
I used to go down to the garlic festival in
that would be a
mid-state New York. Yeah. Okay, and you know I had gotten talked to people there and gotten some seeds. Never asked them exactly how to do it. And then I went online because either we had too wet, too dry. Should I do it in the ground? Then I tried raised beds.
Okay.
But my hot peppers and you know, the jalapenos and stuff like that, you know, any of the onion versions, everything was doing wonderful.
Okay.
But the garlic didn't.
Maybe go back to that garlic festival and talk to them again because we're missing something.
Well, I'll just get garlic from them.
Okay. That's a good plan. Hey, Mitch, thank you for the call. And over to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
Are the windows buried over there yet?
This is a windowless room. It's kind of like a casino. We never know what time it is.
You never know your fate. You're doomed.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Ray, you made a little comment yesterday about it's kind of weird to have a gardening show this time of year, but you should have more faith than that. You should have your children playing in dirt and water and planting seeds inside. Start your plants early.
I like that idea, Jim. We'll take it up for a vote later. What'd you say?
Have you a question for us, Jim?
Yes, I've heard it said that, and I think I've had it happen for me, that if you plant, say, like a tomato seed in the ground when the ground is warm enough and you're going to be transplanting your plants out the same day, that the seeded plant and the transplanted plants will bear fruit at the same time, really.
You know, there's some truth to that. Certain plants, there's no major, you know, the research has shown no major advantage from starting that plant from seed versus a little rooted cutting. Now, other plants, so that's not just a general statement. Other times, your plants will do way better if you actually have a rooted little plant that you're installing. So it really does depend on the crop. Tomatoes, I always found I've had better luck when I actually use a little rooted plant and put that in.
The mistake that an awful lot of people make, too, is if they're starting seeds indoors, they're starting them way too soon.
February, March, and actually in January.
You're into April on some of these things. You only want them 4 weeks maybe ahead of time.
Oh.
And if you start them too early, they're always going
to
do worse.
But something like a green bean, I've always had way better going right to the soil.
Yeah.
And those are the concepts. So if you actually planted green bean plants and planted seed, you're going to end up pretty much with the same product. Mm-hmm. Actually, it might be further ahead with the seed.
Yeah.
Because, again,
I'm
those
wondering
plants,
on your,
are, they just do
your
better.
Your largest oak, or you said any species of trees?
Next year for the big big tree hunt, we're going to be taking any species of tree. We're looking for
Does that include Western Massachusetts area?
We're actually going to look for the New York region, so we're in Region 4. It's a regional, but if you find a state champion and it's not in New York, if it's in Mass.
Oh, I think I have found one years ago.
If it's in Mass, we will measure that, and even out of state.
A little town called Sunderland, Mass. It's right on Route 116, just north of Amherst.
Yeah.
You go down the street where their town library is on, right at the traffic light, when you're coming south on 116, you take a left. There's a white sycamore tree there that has never been cut down. It was there when the first white settlers came into the Pioneer Valley. And I measured it one time, circumference, and figured out the diameter was a little over 8 feet diameter.
That's a big tree. Yeah, wow. It very well may be already on the record books already for Mass.
Yeah, go to your library, like at the library in Sunderland. I went in there before I went and saw the tree. And look up a book called, I think it's called The Champion Trees of the United States or of America.
Yeah.
They'll list them all over the country.
That's terrific. And you can get that online now, too. American Forest, which is the organization that holds the National Big Tree Registry, has that published. And New York State also does. But listen, if you get a chance, send me an email with the measurements and the location and maybe a picture. And then we can.
They take the measurements to determine the champion tree. They measure the circumference or the diameter 4 feet off the ground. They measure the spread of the crown, and they measure the height, and they have a formula that
That's right. Jim, before we let you go, let's get the email address here from Fred.
Yep. So my email is fred@landisarboretum.org, and all the contest rules will be on our website, and that'll be landisarboretum.org.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call, my friend. Let's go over to John in Rexford. John, you're on.
Hey, fellas. Quick question. In my woodsheds with my firewood the last 3 years, it seems like I've got powder post beetles is what I could determine they are. They basically leaving a lot of white dust on the firewood in pretty heavy quantities where you can see where they burrow in.
Definitely, that's powder post. Yep.
Okay, it seems to be more prevalent on the wood that's been in the sheds for 2 years. Is there a way to break that cycle? I was thinking of maybe stacking the wood outside for a year somewhere in the weather, but it just seems like they just show up every year in the wood as I keep, you know, refreshing the woodsheds.
Yeah, typically the older wood, you want to shuffle it out so that way your two-year wood is always – everything's being burned maybe on a one-year cycle. But I know that's not possible with certain species like hickory and oaks really do way better if you give them a two-year season. But, you will see more of that. And, we try to keep our wood outside of the woodshed-type area. We keep it outdoors, and we keep it covered. Oh. And we also make sure that you have good space in between each of the little rows so that you have good air circulation.
Yeah.
They don't like the air circulation that much. They like the kind of stagnant air. And, powder post beetle will get in there. And you just certainly don't want it to spread to your woodshed or worse. So
it seems like there's enough of them that must stay with the wood that stays the longest in there, and they just reinfest.
That's what
I try to rotate it out, get rid of that older stuff every year.
And not all species of wood really attracts it either. So typically ash is a really good wood for burning. A lot of people say it's their favorite wood because it's not too hot, it's not too it produces enough BTUs without overheating your stove. You could literally cut ash almost green and utilize that
wood. There's going to be a lot of ash available soon too.
And there's going to be a lot of ash available. I don't see a lot of powder post beetle
in
there.
Emerald ash borer is killing almost all the ash.
Okay, so basically maybe just 1 year I could just leave the sheds empty and just stack outside and try that. Maybe break the cycle.
Yep. Or you might try just using the ash wood in your sheds because I have never seen a lot of powder post beetle on ash. I get a lot of it on oak and a lot of the other ones, a lot of the real good burning ones.
But, John, thank you for that call. We are joined today by Fred Breglia of Lantis Arboretum and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. Both of these guys braved some very terrible driving conditions, and if you do have to drive today, do take it easy. Depending on where you are, there could be a lot of snow or just a little very slippery snow, so do take it slow today. Bert and Saugerties, how much snow do you have down there, Bert?
Only about 4 or 5.
Oh, that's not too bad. You're on the air.
But the roads aren't too great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the subject today. I was curious. I had an indoor plant front. I have a couple of amaroses, a couple of pots, and they each have maybe 3 or 4 bulbs in them. And they've got tons of green leaves on them right now. And I know you go into a store, amaroses are blooming right now, and I wonder, should I just let the green leaves mature and fall away, or should I be cutting them off, or how should I get these amaroses to
What typically happens on a bulb when you get green growth and you're not getting flowers is for whatever reason in the previous cycle, the leaves were not on the plant long enough or not in enough light so that they refresh the energy in the bulb. The bulb is a storage mechanism, and you have to have the leaves on there to put the energy back in the bulb so that that embryonic flower is developed for the next season. So, you don't cut them off. What you need to do now is keep them in as bright and good a growing condition as you can and allow those leaves to mature normally so in the next cycle they'll have enough energy to bloom.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Bert. We appreciate it. And over to line 7 and Jim in Clifton Park. Jim, you're on.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I have a question. My wife and I had some gardening work done our house, and they put in a couple of dwarf Alberta spruce and a weeping blue spruce. We live in a wind tunnel. The wind just howls through there. How badly do I need to cover those trees, wrap them up in burlap?
Well, you should be okay on the Colorado spruce, but the dwarf Albertas can burn.
They can burn up
on the west side, particularly. So I would go ahead and wrap them because it's easy.
Yeah, Yeah.
Yep. The plant won't, even if you're in a real windy spot, you probably won't have any worry about losing them, because those are pretty hardy plants. But that dwarf Alberta, once it gets burned up, sometimes it's hard for that to recover. I've seen some that just take years to kind of come back, and they are a slow grower. Yeah. So a little bit of burlap, like Bob said, I think would help you on in that spot.
All right, Jim, thank you for the call. Let's go over to Claudia, who I believe is in Leverett, Mass. Claudia, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have years and years struggled with Mexican bean beetles. I've done all the research about, picking them off, killing them, and bagging the plants up, and just trying to destroy them. I don't know what to do to get rid of them. And I just love my beans. There's a particular kind. I grow a pole bean called rattlesnake bean, which are delicious, but I'm sick of the bean beetles.
Yeah.
And hand picking them seems to be like a lost cause, because typically
they hide. I mean, I do as much as I can, but they still seem to overtake no matter how much I pick.
We know what to do, Fred.
I mean, you certainly can use. There are some organic products that could be applied to that plant. I know.
Yeah.
Any time that I eat plants, I'm always more apt to not put stuff on, even if it has some holes. I deal with the damage more so than I do the application, but I know you guys probably
safe organics that are either bacterial products or diseases of various insects that are not chemical poisons.
Yep.
And I would think about trying one of those.
What would BT do it?
BT is for caterpillars, Lepidopterus, I believe.
Yeah, I don't think the BT is going to get those beetles.
There's one I can't think of the
active. But if I get them at the larva stage, I see them in the larva stage.
You could definitely get them in the larval stage.
I think spinosad would be.
Spinosad would be one.
Would be the first one I'd try.
How do you spell that?
S-P-I-N, spinosad. And it's available. There's a couple of different brand names, but I would try that because it's good for beetles.
Yeah, especially in the larval stage. Once they go to a full beetle, I don't know how much.
Yeah, I see them when they're larvae. The other thing I was wondering is, I know they winter over in the soil, so I was wondering if I skipped a year, like didn't grow beans.
That would probably help. Anytime you can break that cycle up with these natural.
Or rotate them.
Or rotate them far enough apart.
I do. Yeah, I move them. Well, my garden's only so big. I mean,
yeah,
I can move them, but they're, but maybe skip a year.
Maybe skip a year, but, you might try that organic product first, something like that, and maybe just trying to diligently try to pick more aggressively, especially when you see them. Mornings are often better time to pick.
Yeah.
First, they're like human beings, like fish in a lake. They wake up in the morning, they want to eat, just like a little kid. They want to wake up in the morning, they want to eat.
Yeah.
So you're going to have way better luck getting them and less hiding if you went first thing in the morning. We're talking as soon as it's getting light out.
All right, Claudia, thanks a lot. Now, would this be one of those situations where Uncle Fred's method of taking a few of the dead beetles, turning it into a paste and spreading them on the...
you certainly, this might be
as a
one
warning
of these,
to the others?
It might be one of these applications where a death spray might work. And if you wanted to do a concoction like that, it's been shown to definitely have effects on... feeding plants.
If you ever get out of the Landis Arboretum, Fred's death spray would probably be a pretty good marketing.
So for those of you that just don't know, in case anyone's wondering what the heck it is, because you haven't maybe heard this on the air before, I know Ray brings this up more than once.
Yeah, a whole lot.
You're never going to let me live this one down.
Absolutely.
But you basically take an old blender, which works well, not one that you're using for, you don't use the wife's. I already tried that. I get in a lot of trouble with that one. So you just want to take an old blender or just buy a cheap one for the product, and then you'll pick some of these little beetles when they're actively feeding, and you put them in this blender with some water.
Yeah.
And you blend them up, and you create a spray. And you literally create a liquid we call death juice. That's no trademark on that.
Nope.
And you'll use a tank sprayer, because a little hand sprayer often gets plugged up with little pieces.
Sure.
So you go with a tank sprayer, and you spray that on, and it does give warning to the other bugs. But you do have to reapply that.
Yeah. I never get tired of this story. Let's take a break, Zach. I'll drink it all.
I never tried it with those string bean beetles, but.
800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Gardening Show. It's a blizzard. Well, what the heck?
Support for WAMC comes from Cindy McMahon Hunt Real Estate, ERA, selling homes throughout the Capital Region since 2003, offering pre-listing preparation, professional photography, and staging services. GetCindySold.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to the aesthetic, cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, laser, and skin care since 1996. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. 518-786-1700. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George. Hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. And from George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you. It's a gardening show, early January. Fred Breglia is here, and Bob Graves, and you at 800-348-2551. And before we get back to the phones, gentlemen, just a few quick emails. This one's from Ed. I got tomatoes from my garden right through December. Why would that happen?
Oh, it was mild. Weather was mild.
That's pretty late.
Yeah, well, that's pretty late. You know, it might have been a microclimate where I didn't get much of a frost. But, you know, a lot of farmers will pick them when it gets late in the season, even green, and they'll still ripen.
They will.
So if you get them before it really freezes.
Never seen them quite that late, I don't think.
That's pretty late.
That's late.
All right, this one is from Mary in Amsterdam. I dug up my tulip this year, and I never planted them again in the fall. Can I plant them in early spring, or do I need to wait till the fall of 2018? If I plant in the spring, will they bloom in the summer? Why are you growling?
At this point, I would plant them in the spring. I don't know as if you're going to get tulips that year.
I don't think they're going to bloom because, see, they have to be in the ground developing their roots when it's cold.
Yep, and they need that dormancy.
I certainly wouldn't hold them till the next fall because they may just desiccate out.
I think you'd dry them out by then. Out, so know. I think it's worth a shot. Put them in the ground and
see what happens.
No reason to get angry, Bob. Just a radio show.
Got them growling.
All right, this one is from Casey. Hi, guys. Building a new house, starting over in a very wooded area. Sad to be leaving my very established soil in my garden. However, what do you recommend, raised bed gardens or large in-the-ground gardens? I only grow a limited number of veggies, Brussels, tomatoes, peppers.
Yeah, you know, I always say, what kind of soil do you have? Because it's not a really a one-answer sort of question. It depends on what you've got. If you've got good soil, then it really is a lot of extra work to do a raised bed. And honestly, if you've got good soil, it's going to be hard to mimic that really good soil, even in a raised bed.
I'd be worried if she's in a real wooded area, she's got enough sun.
But that's what I was going to say.
Whether you put them in the ground or in a raised bed, it isn't going to make any difference.
It's not going to give you more sun.
Not enough sun.
So you definitely want to make sure sun is, you know, the sun,
and you're right,
sun,
it's the quality of the ground you got to work with.
Yep, and if it does seem to be bad soil, then, you know, really bad soil equals a definite raised bed. Sometimes people do raised beds because it's just easier to maintain the garden.
Now, the other thing is, people like Ray and I get older, is it's easier with a raised bed because you don't have to bend over.
It's even easier if you don't do any gardening at all, which is, that's really my trick. All right, let's go to Michael in Otsego County. Michael, you're on.
Hi, I had a question about filberts. I wanted to start a few from cuttings, and I wondered if you had any experience with that, and should I use softwood or hardwood or, you know, old or new?
Boy, I always have to look them up every time I do propagation. If you just do propagation of that. Now, the other thing to consider with filberts, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Fred, but I think there's a fungus disease. There's a filbert decline or a filbert blight.
There is a fungal issue.
So you have to be careful where you're getting your cuttings.
Where you're getting the cuttings from.
Well, my backyard.
Okay.
Well, if it's healthy, you know, the one you've got is healthy.
It's exceptionally healthy. I think it's Catskill or something.
Yep.
It's, you know, out of control.
Yeah.
Growing.
If you wanted to send me that question via email, I have a manual, or you can certainly try to get the manual yourself. It's written by Michael Durr, and it's the manual of like landscape propagation, woody plant propagation. It's actually an older book, but I swear it's like
Durr,
it's like the Bible.
It's spelled D-I-R-R, and he's like the god of woody plants.
Best books out there. And I have the book in my office, and like Bob said, I usually go to that. When someone asks me that question, I will go to that book.
His stuff is online, too.
It is online as well. Yeah. But if you wanted to send that, fred@landisarboretum.org, I'll look it up when I get to the office, and I'll probably have you an answer early next week.
If he makes it home.
If I make it home. Yeah.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. And we go to Maria in Olive Bridge. Hi, Maria.
Hi. I missed the very beginning of the show, but I did get the part where you were measuring trees around, and I just wanted to throw out this as a possibility. There was a tree that I was amazed at, a red oak, and I'm not really good at assigning numbers to what I see visually, but I think it was about 6 feet in diameter, and I don't know if that's that big, because someone else called about the sycamore that was 800 feet, so... What do you think?
Well, you know, just to give you a ballpark of what we've been finding, now we always tell people to measure the trees at 4.5 feet from the ground level.
Why?
Because that's a standard that American Forest put out back in 1941 when they started the National Big Tree Register. So
Fair enough. We
use the standard formula so we can compare our trees, anything that we find, to the national. How big does it get?
Okay.
And the general sizes that we're looking for right now with red and white oaks, the white oaks are the winners this year. We're both in the 19-foot circumference, so if you divide that by three, that gives you a rough diameter. And the red oak winter was a little over 18-foot around. So again, you know, you divide that by three, so you're saying it's like a 6-foot diameter guesstimate. That would be 6 times 3, so you're in the 18 range, so that's close. I would, you know, and a lot of times when you look at a tree, they're not always round. They're actually, the trunks are often oval. So it might be wide on one side, but then narrow on the other. So that's why we say put a tape around it. If you don't have a tape, use a piece of string. Try to keep the string level. 4.5 feet. Send me an email. Let me know how big you think that is. A photo would help too. And then we can take it from there.
Well, that's exciting. And the email address once again?
fred@landisarboretum.org.
Go ahead, Maria.
Okay. I've got that. I do have photographs of it, but it's not near my house. It's at my vet's place, so I'll have to wait till I get over there again. But it is kind of oval and a bit lumpy. There's a big hole in the front, a cavity in the front. And then it has gigantic branches coming up from, it's almost like a burl, a gigantic burl in the front.
Well, it sounds really
neat. I will send, what?
I said, it sounds amazing. It sounds like a really, you know, you've got certainly a large one there. So we'd be interested in seeing it.
Right. It's not only is it gorgeous, it's growing right on a highway on Route 9W in Lake Katrine.
Huh. Wow. It'll be dark. All right. Well, Maria, thanks a lot. We have to move it along here, and we'll talk
thanks
to
for the call.
Ken in Plattsburgh. Ken, you're on.
It's Statsburg. Sorry about that.
Oh, Statsburg. Okay. It says Plattsburgh here. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. How do we manage stilt grass and smartweed? That stuff is just invasive, and I was blowing leaves this fall, and I'm blowing clumps of the stilt grass stuff off, and there's nothing but dirt.
Is this on your lawn or where?
Lawn. It was kind of a field area. We mowed it and put in some nice conservation mixed grass, and that was doing great for 5 years or so, and all of a sudden this stuff is just showing up every place.
How often?
Just alongside the roads and everything.
How often do you mow it?
We mow, we mow every other week or so.
Oh, that's
depends
pretty good.
On the
that's
weather.
Pretty good. That's pretty good, yeah.
Try to keep it, you know, like 3 to 4 inches tall. We don't cut it too short.
Wow.
You know, there's not too many good ways to control something like that if you don't want to use pesticides. Basically, you know, if you're a farmer, you plow it up, but even that's probably not going to take care of it.
Well, smothering it would certainly help and work.
Big
but,
area.
You know, that's a big area. It sounds like you're talking more about lawn size areas, and that's not really easy to smother. I mean, smothering works really, really well. But, you know,
what would you do to smother it?
Well, black plastic would work really well. Black plastic,
okay.
Even a black weed fabric that you
can
buy in a, you know, industrial roll.
Yeah.
And but, you know, you want to make sure you take that back off. But, you know, 2-3, you know, probably a month of covered, and it's going to take out most everything. When we do gardening, the way I nowadays do gardening, and I always say I wish they told me and my dad this 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But you know, we actually use a no-till method nowadays, and have had better luck with it. And that's just the way that we kill all the grass is we just roll out a big piece of black plastic or a piece of weed fabric, which I actually like better, only because the weed fabric lets the moisture go into the soil profile, and also the air exchange that's happening with the biota of the soil and the above ground helps to keep that air exchange working really, really well. So typically, weed fabric, put it down, month later, unroll it, and you're good to go. Okay. And you can reuse that weed fabric over and over.
Where do you get the weed fabric?
Any lawn, yeah, garden center.
You got it at Fatigas?
Sure. Carry it. Okay. Yep.
Let's go over to line 3 and Mark in Pleasant Valley. Mark, you're on.
Hi there, guys. About 8 or 9 years ago, I planted 2 cherry trees, sour cherry trees, 1 Morello, 1 Montmorency. I don't anymore remember which one is which, but one of them produces great, and the other one has never produced a cherry. It has leaves, it has flowers.
Yep.
But then when it comes time to form the fruit, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it sounds like one is probably not cold hardy. When I say it's not cold hardy, the flower buds to produce the fruit probably get injured due to that kind of cold temperatures that happen in the springtime. And the other one obviously seems to be, you know, certainly cold tolerant, and it works really, really well.
Yeah,
for
they do vary in the hardiness of the flower. My guess is the Montmorency is the one you're probably getting the fruit
too.
From, because it seems to be a much hardier sour cherry.
I think you're right about that.
It's North Star is another good one.
They're that about 30 feet apart. One is very slightly uphill from the other. Yeah. The one that's uphill does the fruit.
Yeah, I don't think the location has really anything to do with it. They're both getting, you know, same exposure. It really comes down to certain
your stone
varieties.
Fruits, your cherries, peaches, plums, apricots are all sensitive to frost in the spring.
Okay. Yep. So
some
when you,
more so than others.
Yep. And research those out if you're thinking of planting any new ones. Because
all right.
The ones that are cold hardy, they really produce really well without a lot of work.
Let's go to John in Saratoga. John, you're on.
Hi. I was born and raised in this area, and I like to look at trees. But my eastern white pines up in Saratoga, I don't know if it's just something that has been developing or what, but a tremendous amount of pine cones dropped this year. Hmm. More pine cones than I've ever seen around the grounds, and a lot of cleanup.
Yep.
So I'm curious, was it a weather pattern that we went through?
I've noticed that too.
Yeah, this year is a great pine cone year. You know, cones of trees, fruit of trees, nuts, acorns, all these are nature's on lots of different cycles. So typically, if you're observant, you'll see certain years that just produce massive amounts of those sort of either acorns or pine cones. This year, though, was a really, really big year across the board. And a lot of times it's not across the whole board when I say that. It's like, you know, all statewide. But from calls that I got this year, it seems to be all over the place. And
so just normal sort of a cycle.
Yeah, but it's a cycle, yep. And my guess next year is you'll see
it. Could be enhanced by growing conditions, which I think it was this year.
I think it was, too.
The growing conditions were great.
We had an optimal last spring, 2017 spring, was pretty optimal for plant growth. It really, really was.
Let's go to Gary in Amsterdam. Gary, you're on.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm looking for some information about some, as far as I know, I was told they're called catalpa trees.
Yep.
I would guesstimate that they were either planted or probably transplanted in our yard around 1920.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They are huge and towering. They're the last trees to bud out in the spring.
Yep.
They had huge leaves.
Yep.
We
like catalpa.
They flower and they grow these mutant green bean looking.
Which eventually turn brown.
And what's your question?
How long? What is the life expectancy?
Oh, they can go a long time.
Hundreds of years.
Yeah, hundreds.
Hundreds. I've got a huge one in my yard.
I measured a state champion for New York State. The thing was, it's got to be 6.5 feet diameter.
You're kidding me.
Some people don't like them because they're a little messy.
Some people call them a messy tree. I personally really like catalpa.
But they're gorgeous trees.
And the flower, although it's short-lived, it looks like an orchid. It's like the most bizarre-looking,
but it drops
awesome
flower petals,
flower.
And the leaves are big when they fall, and the beans when they fall. Some people don't like them. Yeah. So a lot of times you don't see them in garden centers and nurseries.
Yeah, because they're like less common, but natively you can
native,
get them.
They seed native themselves plant. All the time.
Yep. They also call it a Johnny Smoker tree because the big pods often turn, well, eventually turn brown and look like long cigars.
No, I'll be darned, but don't smoke them.
No, okay. Wouldn't be good. Wouldn't
Let's
be
go to Larry in Chatham, or Latham. Larry, you're on.
Yes, I've got a smallish garden, about 12 by 20. It's triangular, and I've got chipmunks, and I've got a variety of plants there, hollies by the foundation, some rose bushes, some tulips for the spring, and irises, black-eyed Susan. Are those chipmunks going to damage those plants?
Well, chippies don't eat plants too much, but they will create air pockets underground where they do their where they make their dens. So they're typically not a huge problem. They're more of a problem in a vegetable garden where they come in and sample a lot of things.
Yep.
So in terms of your shrubs and the like,
I think you'd probably be all right.
I wouldn't worry about them. You can trap them with a have a heart trap and relocate them if you want to, but there's so many of them sometimes it's.
We live next to a vacant lot, so I don't think I'll be able to do much
about it. Yeah, unless you see they're causing you a problem, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, you might also try like cayenne pepper if you wanted to just get them. Just sprinkle cayenne pepper around your plants. It's not going to hurt the plant. It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt the chipmunk. But what it might do is if the chipmunk has a lot of places to go, it might just say, hey, I don't really like. I mean, I've never met too many chipmunks that like the cayenne pepper.
He talks to chipmunks.
He chipmunks.
And trees, but hey, that's another
story.
Well, Larry, thank you for that, and I think we'll have to leave it there. Fred Breglia, how do people find out about the Landis Arboretum?
It's landisarboretum.org. That's our website. Also, our Facebook, Landis Arboretum on Facebook, and if you're into big trees. And
who isn't?
And who isn't? We have an Ancient Forest and Champion Trees Facebook page, and we also started the Big Tree Hunters group. And just to give you the idea, the amount of growth we've got, 200-something people last spring. We have over 30,000 on our page.
You're kidding me. Yeah. Amazing.
Three people in our Big Tree Hunters group last year. It's approaching 6,000 people in that group now. So Big Tree Hunters and Ancient Forest and Champion Trees, find us on Facebook.
And then, not as exciting, Bob Graves. how do we find out more about Fadigans?
Fadigans, which is spelled F-A-D-D-E-G-O-N-S, FadigansNursery.com, Fadigans.com.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in the dink and the dank and being on the program today. Thanks to everybody who called in and the great questions we had today. Support comes from Rick Orlando's New World Home Cooking Saugerties, celebrating winter with July and January Tropical Cuisine Weekend, January 26th through 28th, serving dinner nightly and Sunday brunch, newworldhomecooking.com. Schenectady Symphony Orchestra announcing The Adventures of Boof Margarine, an homage to silent film comedies, featuring Symphony No. 1 and No. 2, January 14th at 3 p.m. at Proctor's Theater. SchenectadySymphony.org for more information. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Pine Bush Perspectives, a juried photo exhibit featuring photographs of the natural environment taken by visitors, albanypinebush.org. And Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Thank you, friends, for being here on a very cold and snowy afternoon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Deanna Fox will be here to talk about soups and stews, timely stuff. Right now, stand by for news.